I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
On this episode of First Lady and Friends, I had a great conversation with a new friend I just met, British Consul General Emily Cloak. She is here as part of the coronation celebration of the King of England, and we are doing a service project together with their help and show up, the big help out. So fun to get to know her better, to talk about her experiences as the Consul General and all things Utah and all the places she should go. We're excited to have you take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome to this episode of First Lady and Friends. I am so excited. I just met a new friend today, and her name is Emily Cloak, and she is the Consul General to Britain. I'll let you introduce yourself and your title and how that all works. So welcome to the show, Emily.
Oh, thank you so much. I am so honored to be here. So thank you. And to be back in Utah, a state that I love. I visited quite a few times, actually, since I arrived in the US. So I am His Majesty's Consul General. I am the senior diplomat in the region. I'm based in Los Angeles, and we cover the relationship and work for the British government in Utah, Southern California, Nevada, Arizona, and Hawaii.
We're getting to know a lot of consul generals from around the world, and it's just been such a pleasure and just a really fun way to connect with people. Again, you know, my listeners know that I love to get to know people that have a different story. I love to learn about people's experiences. And so I'm just so thrilled that you're here.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
And maybe you should talk a little bit about what we're doing here in a little bit today together, you and I.
Absolutely. So in honor of Their Majesty's coronation, which happened on Saturday for King Charles III and Queen Consort Camilla, there have been lots of different activities over the weekend in the UK that's ceremonial, celebratory, chances for people to come together and really honor the values that are important, both for the King but also the UK. So as part of that, we have something called the Big Help Out in the UK. People being encouraged to volunteer around the UK, but also around the world in our case, for the causes and the issues that we care about. So in honor of that, we are here in Utah to support Teacher Appreciation Week, packing packs and boxes together. And from the consulate, that will include a letter that shows our appreciation for the amazing work that teachers do, and a commemorative pin. And you are doing some fantastic things as part of that too. So it feels really amazing to be here in Utah supporting a cause that's so worthy. I am just in awe of the work that teachers do. So being able to support that today with you feels really good.
Yeah, we're really excited because the teachers that we targeted for this gift and this pack is are U.S. history teachers as well as our European history teachers. And so I think it's going to be really interesting and fun for these teachers to receive these and then, first of all, be appreciated. And second of all, to be able to share with their students this moment in time. I mean, it's a coronation in England has not happened in...
Not for a little bit of time.
I know,
yeah.
I was going to say, what are we, like, how
like
many
70 years? 70 years.
Yeah, 70. I was like, yeah. 65, 70 years. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we celebrated last year the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, so 70 years since she became Queen. And I mean, that was amazing. And there's so much history there. And now for the coronation and seeing that is a spectacular thing. It's a real moment in time. And I think, you know, I was reflecting on it over the weekend and in the lead up, because we do a lot of work in our consulate and the British government does to prepare for it. But, you know, people across communities coming together to mark that as well. And some of the themes have been around community, supporting youth, sustainability, diversity, both in some of the activities, but also things like the book help out for really special. So it felt, you know, remarkable actually to think that the last one happened 70 years ago and that we're seeing that here today.
Talk to me a little bit about this idea of service. Now, you may not know this, but Utah has been for many, many, I mean, I don't even know if we've never been at this, but we have been number one for volunteerism in the country, above any other state, as well as charitable giving for as long as I can remember. And so, it's in our DNA. It's who we are as a people here in Utah. And we sort of expect when people move here or, you know, as our young children are growing up in this state, that this is an expectation. I was in a meeting today with a business, a car dealership, you know, that has several dealerships around the state. And they were talking to me about their mission of giving back and all the ways they were involved in the community. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, this idea of doing service with the Coronation Week. What prompted that? Is that something that is also ingrained in your British culture? And you know, talk to me a little bit about how that connects.
That's a great question. And I think, you know, what you said about it being ingrained in the DNA here is certainly something that I observed myself when I came. You know, I arrived in the US 6 months after the pandemic started. Mm. And so I did a lot of virtual visits initially to Utah. And then I've had the pleasure of coming out here a number of times. And that theme around service has been really strong. It really came out to me. And it also was strong in the UK. And I think that's one of the reasons why the relationship and the connections between the UK and Utah is so strong, because of those same values that exist here. So with the coronation, you know, one of the causes that is really important to the king is around supporting charities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why it's a big theme of the coronation. That's why we've got the big help out. Those are things that are important to him and that he's championed for many years. And also for Queen Consort Camilla. So doing the big help out and encouraging, you know, us all to mark the coronation, not just with the events like, you know, the coronation itself. And we had something called the Big Lunch, where communities around the country were encouraged to come together. We had a big concert that celebrates, you know, the diverse heritage around music and art and so on. But the big help out is an opportunity to show, it's an opportunity really for everyone to take the time to support a cause that's important to them. But I think doing it around a national event and encouraging everyone to do it at once creates a big moment around it. And it's important, I think, to many people who might not always have the time to think about it. So I think actually shining a spotlight on it and using the coronation as that moment to honour that and to honour people around the country and the causes that we care about are really important. So we as a consulate, you know, we had the opportunity to think, okay, how are we going to mark the coronation? Yeah. And I think, you know, community values is really important to me. We've talked about it quite a bit in the consulate as well, about how we're going to do more of that in our work here. So when we were planning our activities, we did a big event on the weekend that brought our community together to celebrate the coronation. But what we really wanted to do was bring the big help out here to life. Mm-hmm. And we represent the UK in 5 different states. And we wanted to do something in each of them and to come out and for our consulate members of staff to come out and to partner with our stakeholders and the community here, because it matters to us. So having the chance to do that with you here in Utah, where we, you know, we've learned a lot from the people here in terms of the service that they give, you know, day in and day out is really special. And on Teacher Appreciation Week, just a couple of extra thoughts. I mean, my father was an educator, so I have seen up close and also through my own experience how important education is to give everyone a good start in life. But also for the king, championing youth has been a big interest. One of the things that he did was set up the Prince's Trust many years ago, which support kids to get, you know, the best start in life through education or wider training programs. So this feels like the perfect fit being here today.
Oh, I love that. And it really is. I mean, when we were brought this, I'm like, yes, of course, you know, obviously things I love together.
Oh, nice.
teachers and service and Britain. So all the things I love. You mentioned you came here shortly after the pandemic and, you know, this idea of service and bringing people together. You know, our Show Up initiative really has had a focus and really a birth out of, you know, we came into office when right during the heat of the pandemic. It just so crazy. And you, it sounds like you sort of came into this position at a pivotal time as well. I guess, you know, we saw a lot and I you know, cause it's a worldwide pandemic, which is really crazy to think about. You know, we see tragedies in different areas in the world and to think that we all experience this incredible tragedy all as a world, as a globe. It's just crazy to think about, but maybe talk a little bit about how you're seeing service, and we've seen it, and this is that's why it's been a big focus for us, is how, because we were so pulled apart, and it created political divisions, it created just really a lot of fear-based attacks on different organizations or groups and divided us in so many ways. Talk a little bit about how you've seen service and the way we volunteer and come together, how that's bringing our communities back together.
That's such a great question. I mean, the pandemic, I think we're still experiencing the impacts of the pandemic in many, many different ways, whether it was, you know, the poverty that, you know, some people experience or mental health issues. You know, the pandemic really shook up just how we lived and how we worked and brought you know, a lot of unknown when it first happened in, and that uncertainty is you know, scary. You know, I was in the UK, obviously, when the pandemic started, I was on maternity leave and, you know, remember very vividly, you know, the pandemic starting and you know, the worry that so many people experienced and the very difficult impacts on many people around the world. I think, you know, service and community, therefore, is so important. So I think the key thing with the pandemic, for example, particularly when we're all pulled apart, and, you know, I think back to points in the UK and then the US where, you know, we had lockdowns and so on. When you're all pulled apart at that moment, trying to find community and helping each other is so important. And we can do that in so many different ways, whether it's through different networks or, you know, charitable work or, you know, helping out a friend. There are so many different ways, I think, that we can kind of bring community into our day-to-day work. I think for me, you know, just sort of, I guess, with the pivot onto to my role, so as a diplomat, diplomacy, I think of, is how we bring people together around the issues that we care about, you know, whether it's how we work together on economic opportunity, you know, building back better, let's say, from the and greener from the pandemic, or how we work together on environmental stewardship or whatever the issue might be. What I really love about diplomacy is how we as people connect and learn from each other and support each other. And that has been a real honor, kind of coming out here and getting to know people, you know, people like yourselves, and learning from people and learning from initiatives, and particularly with the pandemic, which shook everything up so substantially, learning from each other on how we can, you know, adopt different things or different initiatives. I think that was definitely something for me that I really valued being out here. And I think the other thing that I found is how we can work together to create those networks. Because when we're together and we're with each other and we learn from each other, I think we're stronger as a result from it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And we've seen that here. We've seen so much that when we come together, we all those kind of fears and divisions, when we're working to uplift our communities, we see a lot of those are minimized when we can really come together and see each other as humans and not other each other.
Completely.
So it's been really powerful the way we've witnessed it here too. I lots of times talk about your you know, when I meet somebody new and have them on my podcast, I love to get to know you and where you grew up and all your experiences as a child. And I didn't do that yet, so we'll do that when we come right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here with Emily Cloke. She is the Consul General to Britain. Am I getting that title exactly right? I mean, there's
really.
Go ahead. You say
so it's the British Consul General.
Okay, there we go. There we go. And we've talked about why you're here and doing the service together. We're really excited about that. But let's go back and just, you said you, I love to get into the personal stories and just talk about, first of all, where you grew up. Obviously there's, you know, there, we know kind of where, but let's talk a little, we know that it's a, there's more to it than London.
This is where I say I grew up in London.
Oh. That's
but,
great.
But there is more to there's it than
perfect.
London.
That's perfect. Okay. So talk to me about where you grew up, your family. Just talk to me about your childhood and growing up and stuff.
Of course. So I grew up in London, which I loved. London, you know, I'm a passionate Londoner and, you know, it's a very diverse, wonderful city that, you know, has countries from all around the world there, which is fantastic. So I grew up in London. I mentioned a bit earlier that my father was an educator, and, you know, my mother a homemaker, and we have a very close family. I've got two brothers as well. And I grew up in London and I did study outside London for university. So I studied in Cambridge as my undergrad. I studied law. And actually, when I first started work, I started as a lawyer.
Okay.
And I've also lived in Nottingham. So I have experienced different parts of the UK and recommend, you know, anyone from Utah thinking of traveling to the UK to come, and you know, explore all around the UK. It's a wonderful place, and it's geographically, in comparison with the US, you know, fairly small and compact. So you can jump, you know, if you fly into London, you can jump on a train, for example, and be up in, say, Edinburgh in, you know, 4 hours. It's really easy to get around. I started working as a lawyer and ultimately decided that I wanted to work on day-to-day issues that affected people's lives more. So I made a transition to work for our government, and I've been working there on a range of different issues, from, you know, an early job was setting up the world's first green investment bank, which was fantastic. I was the chief of staff to one of our government ministers, and then I've also worked internationally. So, yeah, back to your original question, I had, a lovely childhood in the UK with my family, close family experiences, lots of, you know, taking up the green space, the parks in London and the UK. And, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, really loved how international it is, what a diverse city it is. You know, I'm a proud Londoner, and actually went back over spring break for the first time in a while. And it was good to be home, but obviously love my time in the US as well.
That's amazing. So your father was an educator. So tell me a little bit about that journey and maybe the things he taught you or inspired you to do as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my father was a head teacher for, we would call it secondary school in the UK. That's basically sort of the age range is 11 up to 18. Okay. And, you know, I come from a close family, so very close to both my parents who've taught me a lot. But with my dad, I think him being an educator, that definitely, you know, we used to, and talking, you know, about the PACs that you're just talking about in history, you know, my dad's area of specialism was actually history. So we used to spend a lot of time just talking about history. If we'd, you know, drive places, you know, we would just talk about different issues. And so I think having my father as an educator definitely sort of helped inspire my love of education and also the value of it. And you know, it was a wonderful experience for me. And also just actually, I remember just thinking about it now because you've taken me right back to our childhood. You know, listening to a lot of music. Yeah. I saw as I was walking through pictures of the Beatles. So, you know, listening to music, you know, chatting about current affairs, history, different things there. So it was, you know, I learned a lot from my parents, but also values. Mm. You know, we're very close. We support each other, are kind to one another. And that's how I like to be now with both my daughter. I have a young child with my family, with my colleagues. Kindness and supporting each other is really important to me. Mm. And I try and bring that to how I live my life now. And a lot of that started with my experience growing up and my parents.
Mm. We're seeing some interesting trends in our education system here in the U.S. And of course, it's different in every state, as you know. And you know, we have a unique education system here in Utah with a lot of local control, which we love. But also, it kind of brings with it some interesting dynamics where, you know, we're seeing, again, back to those sort of divisions and sort of the politicization of different aspects of education. Talk to me a little bit. Is it similar? Are you seeing things like that in the UK? I know the system's very different, but talk a little bit about maybe some of the pressure. We're seeing so many pressures on our teachers in our public education. Talk a little bit maybe about the experiences in the UK.
That's a really good question. I mean, in terms of the overall system, there are, you know, what we call the national curriculum, where there are a set number of subjects and things that students learn until, you know, I think 16 years old, for example. And there are different types of schools. There are, you know, public schools, which the state leads and sets the agenda for. There's kind of private schools where students can pay for their education. And then more increasingly, actually, there's more autonomy for different groups to set up schools too. I think, you know, going back to Teacher Appreciation Week, you know, teachers do such a marvelous job. You know, they work long hours. And my experience also just of being around teachers while I was growing up, but also observing it now, and you see it in the press, you know, teachers are very caring.
Yeah.
So it's beyond what are the actual needs and requirements in the classroom, but you often see how they give empathy to students, or, you know, how they support kids coming up to them and you know, things around that. And they work, you know, they work really, really hard. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's not an easy profession to be in. And, you know, it's not, compared to some, you know, some sectors, some areas, the most highly paid compared to others. So, you know, what they do and what they do for our communities is completely incredible. I'm in awe of the work. And, you know, I spent a short period teaching English, actually, to foreign students in the UK. And it's tiring work. You know, it really is. And
I think we all learned that when we got our kids home during the pandemic. We all were exhausted. As a former teacher myself, we all had our eyes opened a little bit, I believe.
Absolutely. And that juggle, you know, it was going back to the pandemic and how hard it was for many people. That was, you know, it's not easy to do. And I think, you know, I personally didn't experience it. My daughter was too young. But with colleagues, I observed, you know, having kids at home, sort of, you know, pivoting to that virtual classroom, supporting kids through lessons in the early days. You know, it wasn't easy. And I think, you know, families went through a lot, and so did teachers, so did schools. And, you know, hats off to all of them, because I think ultimately it's a collaboration, right?
Yeah.
Supporting kids and their journey. It involves great teachers, parents supporting families, others to do so as well. It really takes the whole community working together, I think.
Are you seeing in the UK kind of what we're seeing here in the US is we're seeing some real gaps in learning and the experiences that kids are having because of that pandemic? I mean, here in Utah, honestly, we feel pretty blessed and happy with we only had kids out of school for all but one school district had kids just out of school from that March to May, those 2 months,
oh, wow.
2 to 3 months. And then almost every school except for the, like I said, one exception was, I think, Salt Lake School District didn't go back. But everybody else went back that fall of 2020. And really our, you know, the data that we collected was our math scores didn't drop.
Incredible.
Whereas almost everywhere else in the country they did. And our other scores were actually did really well. In fact, I think it was everything else stayed the same. I'll have to look this up for sure, but I think our math scores actually went up.
Amazing.
And so talk maybe a little bit about I think we're just still now finding the ramifications or seeing the ramifications of maybe that. And it's no fault of anybody's. It was just we were all in this craziness together, not knowing and doing the best we can. I'm not, you know, there's no aspersions here. We're just, you know, learning. And maybe as we figure this out, we can figure out how to help bring that back or, you know, the next issue that we have, knowing how important it is for kids to be in school.
Well, firstly, you know, hats off to Utah for that experience and for raising, you know, those literacy rates during that period. That's incredibly impressive. So being completely honest, I think, you know, I haven't been close to, I guess, the experiences of pupils in school over that period, because I guess from a personal experience, I didn't experience it myself. Right. I just sort of observed, obviously, schools, you know, went to more virtual working over a period. Mm-hmm. I think it was beyond that sort of 2 months more generally, and different places may have had different experiences. So I haven't personally observed it, but as a general issue, obviously, when a pandemic happens, and people away from the classroom and those interactions with their peers as well, you know, of course there are impacts there. But I think particularly with at that time me being on maternity leave and obviously not having kids in that system, I observed it a bit. I didn't observe it up front. Yeah. But it, you know, going back to the impacts of a pandemic, you know, that was the first sort of global pandemic in many years that affected so many people at once. And, you know, overnight going from being in school to being out of school or being in work, being, you know, being at home, having a lockdown, all of that uncertainty, all of the impacts that it had, whether it's on mental health or being away from peers or, you know, not being able to pursue your livelihood, you know, it affected many, many people. So I think, you know, schools are centres of community where people can come together and, you know, not being able to do those in-person classes, of course, would have affected people quite deeply. But, you know, hats off again to Utah for what you did there. Impressive.
Well, and you know, it really is our teachers and again, back to you know, who we're celebrating today through our service together is really, of course, you know, again, my mom was an educator. My grandma was an educator. I'm an educator. I feel like, you know, I do everything I can to be a cheerleader for teachers and the things that they're doing. And I
that
love
really
that we're,
across.
I nice. Love that we're celebrating these history teachers. I remember, you know, and I think the more we learn, about our history as I mean, we're in a weird world right now where we're not all agreeing on the same facts anymore. So maybe talk a little bit about, you know, the things you're experiencing with the history and your job, where you're at right now with the government. How are we, you know, getting people on the same page as far as like celebrating the same history and really learning from it? I mean, we're seeing the struggles now in Ukraine and the war that's going on there. Yeah. And we've seen war in Europe before. And what did we learn? And what kinds of patterns are we seeing? And maybe talk a little bit about that from your perspective.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, we can learn a lot from looking back at our history and not forgetting that and what it means for the future. So just in terms of our consulate work, we promote, prioritize, look for partnerships on areas of importance for our government. So whether it's on trade and investment between, in this case, say the UK and Utah, or whether it's on how we work together on science and innovation, at the heart of what we do is look for partnerships on how we can work together around the issues that we care about. I think we are very united on, you know, our stance on areas like the war on Ukraine, you know, a terrible, terrible invasion by Russia there that's caused a lot of hardship for the people of Ukraine, have had, you know, terrible impacts and, you know, frankly, needs to stop. And the UK, the US, people around the world are very united on that. And the you know, at the heart of what we do, going back to diplomacy, is bringing people together around the issues that we care about, highlighting the values that we have, championing that with decision makers, but also members of the public. Mm-hmm. You know, a part of our work that we do is around public diplomacy, sort of bringing people together around our values, whether that's, you know, for example, our consulate will march in Pride. We will go into universities and talk about, you know, what the British government does or the UK and focus on particular issues. For example, how we're celebrating the coronation, you know, we're wanting to honour that through things like the Big Help Out. That's part of our work as well. So I think, you know, going back to the original question, history is incredibly important. It affects the day-to-day as well. And one of the things that I think is interesting about the UK-Utah relationship actually is the history. Yes. So there is a lot of British heritage in Utah, I learned, yes, coming. And I think an appreciation, therefore, of our culture and how we can, you know, honour and celebrate that together. So I think we see the history in everything. Yeah. It's there in family heritage, it's there in our day-to-day values, it's everywhere. So it's important for us to honour that and to consider that in terms of how we grow together as well.
Yeah, I love that you brought up our shared history, because I am mostly British.
Wow, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Most of my ancestry is British. It's British and Danish. Those are our two.
Amazing.
But we do have such a shared history here in the state of Utah, because so many of those early Mormon pioneers were from England. Yeah. There was a huge immigration when members they would join the church and then they made that trip here. And then came to Utah. I mean, almost, like I said, almost every single line of mine has English history and British history. And so we do, I think, here in the state of Utah, most of our original Mormon pioneer ancestors were there. So we love that shared history. And I think that's why we feel such a kinship. We were in England a few years ago for the first time. I'd never been
there. I was
going
to ask actually if you've been over.
We went, my husband and I, when he was the lieutenant governor, we were on a trade mission. It was actually the air show. They do a huge air show at Farnborough. Yeah. And this year, actually, we're going to Paris because they do the air show in each place every other year.
Just a couple of hours by train, actually.
Well,
to London.
Actually, I think we are. Our delegation are heading to England in June, so we're excited about
looking
that.
Looking forward to welcoming you.
Yeah, no, we're excited. It's just one of my favorite places. It was really incredible.
Did you enjoy it? What did you do when you?
I absolutely loved it. It's again, it felt so much like home to me. It really did. I mean, it was the first time there, but you know, I had a grandmother that was so very English that she. I mean, it was we had to set the table just so, and there were things that she just reminded me, every person I saw in England just kind of sort of reminded me of my grandma, and you know, just that That's we nice. Have that heritage. Plus, you know, I was telling you earlier, I'm a little bit of a Brit box connoisseur, and so I watch a lot of British television, so it felt really connected. But I have to say, one of my favorite things that I did there, speaking of history, is the Churchill War Rooms.
Yes,
that is probably by far the most interesting thing I did there. Just it being England and whatnot, it just was preserved and left exactly the way it was.
Amazing.
And I was just, it was incredible. I had read a biography on Winston Churchill, and then I walked into there and it was unbelievable. So it's in a bunker. It's exactly the way he left it. And he walked out after the war, plus the museum part. But it was, that was one of my favorite parts.
Oh, I'm so glad that you had a good trip. And there's amazing history, actually, as you say, like different you know, places like the war rooms, but also the museums, you know, incredible. And you know, you can walk around and be in the war rooms and then St. James's Park or whatever else right next to it as well. So
it's places you've heard about and you've read about. And for me, it was just to be able to be there. And I've read every Jane Austen. I've seen every Jane Austen movie that's ever been made. And so for me, it was, you know, we went to Bath and we went to a few of these places that I was like, have read so much about that just was really fun. That's why I love to travel and see places I've read about. So we want to continue this conversation and talk a little bit more about our projects together. And we'll do that when we come right back. We talked a little bit about me going to England and to London and exploring some of the places there, which is really amazing. And again, we're going back this summer. So you'll have to give me your list of the things I didn't do that I need to do. But let's talk about Utah a little bit, and you being here, you've spent a little time here. Talk a little bit about maybe some places you have been, and then we'll talk about maybe the places I should get you to.
Absolutely. Always love tips on where to travel. So I've been to Utah, I think, four times. But a lot of that is engagements around, you know, the work that we do, whether it's coming up to, you know, the state capital, whether it's, you know, going places like Silicon Slopes, you know, tech sector is amazing, visiting business is all brilliant experiences. And I have to say, you know, the warm welcome that we get in Utah is always unparalleled. Everyone is so welcoming, and that, you know, goes back to, I think, why I love coming to Utah so much. So it's always really nice to be here. What I would love to do more of is actually go around the national parks. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of looking at the pictures, and some of my colleagues have been, and it just looks absolutely incredible. So what I really want to do actually is come up with my family and explore and do a bit of hiking. And it just looks, you know, fabulous. And it sounds like spring and autumn in particular are really good times to travel.
So great.
So I'm getting out into nature is what I really love to do, and spend time doing outside of work. So that's what I really feel I need to do with Utah.
Remind me, how old's your baby?
She is 3.
So, okay. So maybe still in a backpack, yes, for hiking? Or is she, I mean, a
I
little
think depending
bit.
Depending on the height.
Yeah, depending on the height.
She loves to run around.
A 3-year-old, by the time they're 3, you feel like their feet are basically dragging on the ground when you have them in your backpack, which I did for many years. Yeah. So each successive kid,
where would you recommend?
Okay, so the national parks are amazing.
Yeah.
They're as advertised.
They look incredible.
They really are. There was a campaign, an ad campaign several years ago about the Mighty Five, because 5 national parks. And so it was very popular in Europe, actually. Yeah. There was a lot of tourism targeted, you know, ads targeted in Europe and around the world. It was phenomenally successful, to the point where our national parks have been almost loved to death.
Yeah,
because
well,
we get so many visitors, and especially during the pandemic, because, you know, folks, I mean, people in California, like they were shutting down beaches and even these outdoor places where Utah was like, no, we think you need to get outside and we think that's really great. And so we actually kind of, you know, that was a big draw to Utah because of our outdoor spaces. There was so much tourism during the pandemic. It was crazy.
I read about that.
So, which was great for our state and our economy and everything. So it was really great. And Arches National Park, I've gone there since I was a little kid. And you've seen our iconic Delicate Arch.
Yes.
And I always say to people, you're going to think because it is so iconic and it's so advertised that it's going to be a little underwhelming when you see it. But the truth is, it will absolutely take your breath away. It is something that you have to see. You have to experience that. But because the parks are so crowded now, I think they're doing some lottery and some things like with some of these really popular hikes.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in Zion, there is, and that's the correct pronunciation for Utah.
just
so you know. So in Zion, there is Angel's Landing, which is an incredible hike, and it's a little scary at the end because it's
very steep
and very narrow, and there's a chain that you kind of hold on to because there's been some, you know, people falling
off. Oh, wow. Good to know.
Good, yeah. So, but I think there's a lottery for that now,
yeah.
Depending on the time of year, I believe.
Well, the terrain also, just having looked at the pictures, you know, it's so different to the UK.
Yes.
So it must feel incredibly special actually to see it in person. If the pictures look that amazing, to actually be there in the park must feel amazing.
Well, so. and incredibly different from Northern Utah. That's what people don't understand. You know, I have people come in, I love Utah. We love Park City. We love to come in and ski, which I'm a skier. So I'm like, yes, do it because it's awesome. And our skiing is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we have so many great resorts to ski in. And I absolutely love it. So if you're a skier, so great.
I'm a little rusty.
Yeah.
So I've not been for a while.
I'll tell you the right ones to go to. Don't go to Snowbird if you're just learning.
Yeah.
But go there if you're really awesome.
Do you know what? When you asked about sort of where I'd been in Utah, I think it was the first trip where we went. I think we had a meeting with the lieutenant governor, which was wonderful.
Yes.
But I remember seeing some of the trails outside that building. And they were so steep. I saw lots of people running and cycling, and I was just incredibly impressed. How brave.
We are one of the healthiest states in the nation.
And it prompted a real, actually, like, debate with me and some of my, like colleagues who are, you know, local, Americans. And they were saying, yeah, like, people in Utah are very, you know, love to get out, exercise, very famous for being quite sporty. But I do remember that moment just seeing how it was, like, literally that vertical sort of slope that you just indicated for that hike, looking outside and being super impressed. So
yeah, we do love, and again, diverse, it's just such diverse terrain wherever, you know, whether you're in northern Utah with the mountains or in southern Utah. I mean, some people, you look at some of those pictures and you think, this looks like Mars. It looks like a different planet.
Colors look fantastic.
And it's absolutely beautiful. But what I will say, yes, do the parks and do all the, you know, the iconic hikes that you hear about. But if you really, the sneaky best places are some of our state parks.
Okay.
Because our state parks actually probably would be national parks anywhere else.
Yeah.
But because we're, you know, have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to, you know, the landscape and the incredible things that we have here. One of my favorite state parks is Goblin Valley State Park, which is kind of in that Moab area.
Yeah.
Goblin Valley.
Goblin Valley, okay.
It does absolutely look like another planet.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, when your little 3-year-old will just love to, you can just, if you can just let her run and you won't even have to worry. She'll climb up all over these round rocks. It's so much fun.
Gosh, I can't wait.
Yeah. So there's
a lot of trouble ahead of me, I think, in Utah.
So kind of look at the state parks there. And this is another one in I grew up in central Utah in a small little farming community, and there's a place called Maple Canyon in San Pete County that is really has world famous climbing, like rappelling and rock climbing, because it has a very unique geographic or geological rock formations that are unbelievable, that really you can't find many other places in the world. And so it really is kind of this
after this I'm writing sneaky, a list of all the places that I need to
sneaky place
to
go climb if that's what you're into. So we should ski together. Definitely love to ski.
Amazing. So. Well, you know, one of the things I love to do in my spare time is kind of get out into nature, and whether it's going walking or running, so any opportunity, especially if it incorporates the hanging out with my daughter as well, it's good. Yeah. So I think Utah, perfect place for that kind of activities.
Okay, I see a world where the other states that you're over are feeling a little left out, because I think you're going to be here for most of the
time. Well, you'll be giving me more recommendations on things to visit, so I can see all my weekends being taken gladly.
That's amazing. Well, Emily, this has been so delightful. Thank you again, and I hope to see you in London when we're there.
Absolutely.
And I hope to see you back here as many times as you can, and we'll get out in nature together. So thank you again.
It's been so nice to chat to you. Thank you so much for welcoming me onto your podcast, and it's been a delight to chat.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.